Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip on Route 51.
Union City's looking mighty pretty. You'll see good old Memphis, Granada and Winona, Jackson, Mississippi, Kentwood and Mike City, Hammond, Acres down to New Orleans. Won't you get hip to this kindly tip? When you make that sweet southbound trip,
Glenn Moberg, it's the Route 51 Year in Review Show for 2016, an annual holiday tradition at Wisconsin Public Radio since 2005, bringing you a year of fascinating people, interesting places, provocative politics, inspiring feature stories, and live musical performances. Today you'll hear from jazz violinist Randy Sabine, blues man Greg Kalk and his band The Tone Controls, the South Beach Chamber Ensemble, a bluegrass jam with members of Horseshoes and Hand Grenades and Dig Deep, and the lady you're listening to, Denise Sauter, backed up by her husband Charlie on bass, Jeff Erickson on sax, Scott Stieber on piano, and yours truly on guitar. Denise reworked the lyrics to the Nat King Cole standard Route 66 just for us, so we can have some fun on Route 51. The Denise Sauter Jazz Band recorded live in our Wisconsin Public Radio studios. As we look back on 2016, one political story stands out: the surprising victory of Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton. Trump lost the Latino vote by a significant margin, but he did better than expected, even besting Mitt Romney's level of support in 2012 among Hispanics. To find out why, we visited the small central Wisconsin community of Abbotsford.
Pónganse buzos y echarle muchas ganas. Ya estamos a la mitad de la semana.
The phone is ringing off the hook in a basement in rural Abbotsford. Alejandro Vasquez ignores it and keeps announcing on El Primerito, his own internet radio station, which can reach the entire country from this tiny spot in the middle of Wisconsin.
El Primerito, transmitimos desde la bella ciudad de Abbotsford.
Alejandro Vasquez worked as a newspaper and magazine reporter in Mexico City, which has 21 million people in its metropolitan area. There are only 2,300 people in Abbotsford. About 500 of them are Hispanic, and Vasquez says they had a reason to come here.
In Abbotsford, you don't see people in the streets, like don't have a house or don't have a food. You can live in this city. You don't need to lock your car. You don't need to have a fence. In Abbotsford, the people is very, very Republican.
Vasquez is at ease with his Republican neighbors. He holds up a copy of Noticias, the Spanish language newspaper he also publishes in his basement. Its entire front page is a color photo of Donald Trump.
Mr. Donald Trump, he's not a political man. He's a businessman. He is smart because now he's the president.
He has said, Alejandro, he said the first thing he's going to do when he takes over is deport 2 to 3 million people. Don't you take him at his word?
No. For years and years, we have a different presidents, Republicans and Democrats, and they promise many, many things, and they don't do it.
Alejandro's daughter Yvonne enters the room with her young daughter Mia, part of a new generation of Latino Americans.
Ivan thinks some immigrants should be deported.
Now that he's been elected to be the president, now he's saying, I'm going to deport 2 to 3 million people, but I'm going to deport the criminal ones. I don't think we want criminals in our communities. I think if he's saying that, maybe he's going to make our country better.
Alejandro believes most of the Latinos in Abbotsford are here legally, but even those who aren't are important to the economy.
Who's going to produce the milk? Who's going to clean your office? Who's going to work in the factory? Who's going to clean your house?
EAG interpreters. Bueno, hola, Victoria. Sí, Victoria, ¿cómo estás?
At the county courthouse, Tony Gonzalez is an interpreter who helps Latinos navigate the criminal justice system. He says he is not surprised by the level of support Donald Trump received.
Many Hispanics, you know, are conservative, of conservative belief, you know, socially conservative, right to life.
Gonzalez also says that for those who are third or fourth generation, the economy was the number one issue, not immigration. He admits many were troubled by Trump's campaign rhetoric.
We elected a president, not a dictator. I don't have a label on my forehead saying I'm a legal American. I was born here, and these feelings that people have about you go back to your country that have been kind of prompted because of what Mr. Trump said, they need to go.
But Gonzalez says now that Trump has been elected, most Latinos want to support the new president.
They love this country. We share values that are very similar to the Christian principles that the United States was founded under. Everybody wants to be a part of it and not have to hide.
In Abbotsford, that's a sentiment that Alejandro Vasquez shares as he works to become a U.S. citizen.
Strong families, peace, work, and not only Abbotsford, in Wisconsin, in USA. Don't forget, never. USA is USA.
For some in America's immigrant population, not supporting the president, any president, is unpatriotic. Glenn Moberg, Wisconsin Public Radio News. Trump's victory alarmed some Latinos and many Muslims because of his rhetoric on the campaign trail. Here at Wisconsin Public Radio in Wausau, we had an intern this past spring who was a visiting Muslim student from the North African country of Tunisia. Her name is Wad Gesmi. To experience the American political system, I took Wad to a Donald Trump rally in Rothschild and a Bernie Sanders rally in Wausau. We ran into a Donald Trump supporter at the Sanders rally.
I support either John Kasich or Trump.
What do you think of Donald Trump's call to ban Muslims from entering the United States?
Well, they just stopped there. He said before they were vetted and find out why they were coming. We've had enough attacks here already, so I don't blame him.
Can I introduce you to somebody? This is Wad Gesmi. She is a Muslim from Tunisia, and she's working with us at Wisconsin Public Radio.
Good.
And if Donald Trump had his way, she wouldn't be here right now.
Well, I don't know what to say to that, because I have nothing against Muslims. I love a lot of them. But I don't have anything against anybody.
That is 89-year-old Marilyn McGill of Wapaka. And Wad, you were there when I was interviewing these people.
Yes.
And you started talking to Marilyn, and I turned my back and I turned around. And the two of you were hugging each other. How does that happen?
I just talked to her, and then she said that we don't hate Muslims. Like, we know, like, we have some Muslim friends, and we know how Muslims are. So she's not judging me based on just a group of Muslims. She's not being, like, some of them.
How did you feel about the vibe at the Bernie Sanders event compared to the Donald Trump event?
Compared to the Donald Trump's, that was so different. At Donald Trump's, to be honest, I was kind of stressed because I was expecting something to happen. But at Sanders, when I saw all those people, they were welcoming, they were smiling, I just felt comfortable. I didn't feel any bad, like, feelings. And just to say something about banning Muslims, Islam is the third largest faith in the United States. So would you ban or kick them out? They're Americans. They are Muslims.
Our bright and very capable intern, Wad Gesmi, a visiting Muslim student from Tunisia.
When the votes were tallied, Donald Trump had won the Electoral College, even though Hillary Clinton got 2.8 million more votes than he did. Route 51 featured one of this year's Republican Party electors, Brian Westrate of Eau Claire, and a former Democratic Party elector, Christine Bremer Moogley of Wausau, to talk about the pressure electors face after the popular votes are counted.
So the Electoral College in the United States Constitution, as written, has worked very well both for the American people and the world as a whole.
Christine?
I've done a lot of study on this, Brian, and I know you and I talked about that and how interesting it is when you're a member of the Electoral College about to convene 6 weeks post-election, how you receive letters from people all over the nation asking you to change your vote, usually from the opposite party that you are. When in 2008, I received many letters from people asking me not to vote for Barack Obama because they knew he was not an American and he was born in Kenya. Some of the letters that I'm sure you're getting are equally absurd.
Brian, how many letters have you been getting asking you to change your vote?
It started as a trickle a couple of days ago, and I was reading every one of them, and at the time, early on, they were individual. I mean, people were sharing heartfelt stories, and some of them were absurd, but most of them weren't. I mean, most of them were well-written and well-thought-out, and then the spigot really got turned on, and they started to flow hard yesterday morning. Now I probably am getting about 100 an hour, and so I was originally replying to them all with a message saying, hey, I heard you, thank you. I had some fabulous communication with people where folks were just happy to have been heard, but the sheer volume has made it so now I can't delete them fast enough.
Republican elector Brian Westrate cast his vote for Donald Trump when the Electoral College met on December 19th. I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to the Route 51 Year in Review show. This past election season, we organized and participated in a number of debates and forums, but one of the more interesting was the Wausau mayoral debate between Jay Cronenwetter and Bob Mielke. Cronenwetter brought up an unexpected issue, poverty in central Wisconsin.
Without a doubt, the biggest problem that has been completely ignored by our city hall is poverty in Wausau. And this has been a growing problem for at least half a decade, and city hall has done next to nothing to address it.
You know, as far as the poverty rate for children, this is not just something exclusive to Wausau. This is a national trend. And, you know, talking about transportation, you know, Wausau is not getting the money, and neither is any city in the state, for that matter, as far as our shared revenue. We're not getting money like we used to. So the state budgets are getting tougher and tougher to try to address all these different issues.
Bob Mielke defeated Jay Cronenwetter to become Wausau's new mayor. Another forum we organized on Route 51 involved a hot-button issue from the Central Sands region, the impact of high-capacity wells on the Little Plover River, a top-rated trout stream that has dried up in recent years. A newly released study confirmed earlier research by hydrologist George Kraft that the high-capacity wells were implicated. Kraft was joined on Route 51 by Tomas Houlihan of the Potato and Vegetable Growers and two state representatives, Democrat Katrina Shankland and Republican Scott Krug. Here's George Kraft.
This stuff that I've done in the last decade since the Little Plover first dried up has been confirmed. Pumping in surface waters, lakes and streams are connected. The Little Plover, we need to accept if you put in another well and you have more water consumption without ratcheting something else back, you're going to exacerbate the impacts. There's kind of no two ways about it.
Let's make sure that whatever the DNR approves is not going to harm the environment, but let's not thwart business and let's not stop producing food and milk. I mean, we are positioned in a location with a tremendous amount of water, and I think we have a responsibility to use that water and use it wisely. We are growing healthy vegetables for a hungry world.
Permanent water rights for some people at the expense of water rights for others. This isn't the Wild West. What you're really doing is you're saying, you know, if you have a well that dries up next door, you're out of luck. And that's really unfortunate because, you know, the rhetoric today and every day is about balance, but there's no balance if some people have no water rights and other people have all of them.
So I've been preaching a little bit of patience to people to say we need more predictive modeling, we need more of these pinpoint pixelated views of what's going on all across the region. And those are the places the answers are going to come from. And the only bills that are ever going to get done are the comprehensive compromise solution bills. It's not going to be a one-sided bill. It's going to get done on either side. Frankly, both sides haven't liked very much what I've been working on the last couple of years, but that's the way good public policy goes.
State Representatives Scott Krug and Katrina Shanklin, Tomas Houlihan of the Wisconsin Potato and Vegetable Growers, and hydrologist George Kraft. Politics in 2016 was a rough affair with a presidential campaign that frequently devolved into insults and name-calling. But we found that the kids could be better citizens than their parents at two mock political conventions for high schoolers held by Kids Voting in Wausau. Two kids voting conventions are underway at UW-Marathon County, one for Democrats and one for Republicans. High school delegates are representing their parties, their schools, and their assigned states.
I'm Matt Stewart. I hope you guys vote for me.
Matt Stewart of Colby High, with a full beard and a business suit, stands out as the Republicans nominate their presidential candidates.
I, Preston Mertens, accept the nomination.
For the Democrats, Preston Pre Mertens, also of Colby, faces a stiff challenge from Jacob Lazay of the Engineering and Global Leadership Academy.
Being related to Frank and Alan Lazay, I was brought up in a political environment.
But unlike Republican lawmakers Frank and Alan, Jacob Lazay is a Democrat.
I did grow up in a liberal home.
As the Democrats fight it out on multiple ballots, the Republicans have made their choice.
Matthew Stewart.
Well, Matt, you pulled it off. How do you feel right now?
I feel great. Words can't even describe it.
Pick one thing that you think is the most important for the future of our country.
Homeland security, because there's a lot of people who hate us out there.
And across the street, prevails.
Preston Mertens.
Well, Pre, you pulled it off.
Oh, I knew running against Jacob was going to be very difficult.
What do you think is the biggest challenge we face in the United States?
We're so split. It's either Republican or Democratic Party. We need to really become more unified.
And at these bipartisan mock conventions, kids voting has been unifying Republicans and Democrats in Marathon County and their children for 20 years. Glenn Moberg, Wisconsin Public Radio News. You're listening to the Route 51 Year in Review show on Wisconsin Public Radio. Still ahead, more interviews, more feature stories, and more music from Randy Sabine, Horseshoes and Hand Grenades, and the South Beach Chamber Ensemble. One of the big events we held this past year was a Blues in the Schools appearance by Greg Kalk and his band, The Tone Controls, coordinated by the Great Northern Blues Society. Greg and the band performed in a free Route 51 concert, and I got to sit in on an old Robert Johnson tune called Crossroads.
One, two, three, four.
The Kathleen Dunn Show, Central Time. These programs and many more are possible thanks to listener support. You can learn about WPR programs, schedules, and so much more at WPR.org. Thank you. Support also comes from Attorneys Sturgill and Long, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and the Michigan Upper Peninsula. Information is at 888-613-0600.
You're listening to The Year in Review on Route 51.
I'm home in the Scotty River Valley. It holds a little piece of my soul. And the woman that I left not long ago, she can go on down the road. Well, I know that freight train's bound to leave, and I know I'm heading down the line. Home is where the heart is, they tell me, Lord, but I don't know where that is. Rest traveling to another setting sun before I end my days. I will not find a place to rest my weary spirit and my bones.
A few weeks ago, we had members of two outstanding Central Wisconsin string bands, Horseshoes and Hand Grenades and Dig Deep, join forces for a live in-studio jam session on an original composition by Adam Gruhl called Weary Bones. I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to Adam on guitar, Russell Peterson on banjo, Bob Wygant on mandolin, Oscar Netzel on the upright bass, and yours truly, recorded live in our Wisconsin Public Radio studios on Route 51.
Members of Horseshoes and Hand Grenades and Dig Deep in a live in-studio jam session on Wisconsin Public Radio's Route 51. They'll be participating in a Jamboree Jubilee on December 30th and December 31st at Bernard's Country Inn in Stevens Point. Perhaps the biggest regional story of 2016 didn't involve politics in the traditional sense, but it is one that tore the community of Wausau apart in a year that was supposed to be a celebration of the 40th anniversary of its first Hmong citizens. It involved a heinous crime committed by one teenage boy, Dylan Yang, that took the life of another child, Isaiah Powell, in a case that raised questions about the criminal justice system in Wisconsin. In April, Wausau celebrated the 40th anniversary of the city's first Hmong immigrants. Marathon County Administrator Brad Carter was cheered as he performed a traditional dance. Carter noted the progress since 1976, when the new arrivals from war-torn Laos were met with suspicion.
There was a lot of post-war trauma that people had to work through. They had to work through language. It was hard. The progress has been unbelievable.
But at the end of May, it was a different scene, as hundreds of people demonstrated in the city's downtown. Paula Yang of the National Hmong Sisterhood had flown in from California.
We, the community across the nation, are brokenhearted to hear such verdict placed upon our Hmong son, Dylan Yang.
Dylan Yang, not related to Paula Yang, was the unlikely focus for a rally. He had been convicted of reckless homicide for killing a 13-year-old boy, Isaiah Powell, who was armed with a BB gun. Yang, then 15, stabbed Powell twice in the back. Despite his age, Yang was tried in adult court and faced 60 years in prison.
Reckless homicide? So how does that become a felony and serving an adult time? I have a hard time understanding that.
On stage, Brad Carter made a stunning statement of support.
I am Dylan!
When I was 15 years old, my judgment wasn't particularly good. The circumstances were right. If I was in a bullying situation, who knows what I could have done.
Have you gotten any negative reaction from people who say you shouldn't be stepping forward as a county official, as a community leader, to support someone who stabbed somebody to death?
Not yet. I expect that will be coming.
It was coming. Carter's action drew condemnation from law enforcement and a 30-day suspension from the Marathon County Board. Some, like lifelong resident Gerald Borkhart, thought Carter should have been fired.
He's divided the community, and when you make a mistake, you pay for it. I don't care what it is, you pay for it.
But for others, Carter's suspension opened old wounds. Chair Yang Kang, in his 60s, spoke through a translator. He had fought beside U.S. troops in Laos.
I'm here because I believe in the freedoms that we protected. We don't have freedom. Our troops died for nothing.
But the victim's family told a different story at Yang's sentencing. Isaiah's sister, Alexis Powell, demanded justice.
Isaiah's death has also torn our family apart. My grandparents, my aunts, my siblings, our family will never be the same.
Prosecutor Leslie Pluster painted Yang as a gang member who committed a vicious crime against a 13-year-old boy who never saw it coming.
He received two deep, hard stab wounds, one of them hard enough to lodge into his spine, and he was stabbed to death in front of his closest friends.
But others painted Yang as a victim of relentless bullying because of his Hmong heritage. University of Minnesota researcher Carrie Smolkowski said Dylan had been brutally beaten with a baseball bat while living in California.
The boys beat him with a bat so severely that he was unconscious in the parking lot.
Choking back tears, Dylan Yang asked Isaiah Powell's family for forgiveness.
I have to live with this the rest of my life.
As a result of your actions,
Judge Lamont Jacobson sentenced Dylan Yang to 13 years in prison and 17 years of supervision, far less than the 60 years he could have received. When asked for his reaction, Brad Carter praised Jacobson and said, quote, I accept his rationale. The case remains a sad bookend for a year of celebration for Wausau's Hmong community, leaving questions about whether juveniles should be tried in adult court. Glenn Moberg, Wisconsin Public Radio News. Yesterday, the Wausau Daily Herald released the names of its People of the Year for 2016, and Marathon County Administrator Brad Carter led the list. Route 51 also explored another racially charged issue, the forced removal of American Indian children from their parents' homes. It was the subject of a documentary called Missing Threads by Wausau filmmaker Susan Reitz, who appeared on Route 51 with Loa Porter, a Ho-Chunk woman who was taken from her mother on Christmas Eve at the age of 7.
Being at home, Christmas Eve was snowing out. My mother was telling us to open our presents, that we had to leave immediately, to hurry. My brothers and my other two sisters, we piled into a car and drove to my grandmother's house, which was south of Wausau. We got to my grandmother's house, and shortly after we arrived, police cars arrived and social workers arrived. My brothers were put into a different car. My sisters and I were put into another car. My mother was standing there. I recall my sister screaming and wanting to go back to my mother. Mm. And just us driving away and seeing my mother standing there watching us. And shortly after, she was put into a police car.
Loa Porter, a Ho-Chunk woman who was taken from her mother on Christmas Eve at the age of 7, and one of the subjects of the documentary Missing Threads. Route 51, in two different shows, explored another dark aspect of American history, the forced removal of Japanese Americans to internment camps after the bombing of Pearl Harbor. In the spring, we welcomed Tets Furukawa and Howard Zenimura, internment camp survivors who became Japanese baseball stars. And in the fall, we welcomed Robert Liano and Robert Izumi, World War II veterans who fought valiantly in the legendary 442nd Regimental Combat Team, even though they, too, stayed in the camps. They were in central Wisconsin thanks to the Walk in Their Shoes school history program. Here's Tets Furukawa.
When we walked into the camp, all the evacuees were shocked because they told the Japanese that this is your new home, the stables. for years and years. That's where the horses lived. They shoved the horses out and carted them someplace else, and the Japanese moved in with the manure piled out on the outside of the square windows. And that's when I thought, gee, this is all just a stench of inhumanity for this to be happening to the American citizens.
Howard, how old were you when you got to the internment camp at Gila River?
It was on my birthday. It was on May 16th of that year, 1942. And thinking that, hey, there's no birthday party for me, you know. And inside the camp, well, you know, the barbed wire fence and guards all, towers all around.
You know, I think about it even now. When you take the people out, put them in concentration camp, did you ever stop to think that some of the fathers didn't show up when they had to ride the bus to go to the camp? Well, what happened is that they tell them to go back and check. And go back to the house, the father commits suicide. You know, a lot of people don't realize that. There's a lot of cases like that because he's leaving his home. He lost everything, house, furniture, car. You know, you think about that.
Robert Izumi, how did you feel about having that draft classification? There were people who were worried that you might support Imperial Japan more than you'd support the United States.
Well, I didn't figure that way because I had a brother that was in the service way before Pearl Harbor, and I followed his suit, be a good soldier, which I did, and so my brothers did.
And you were a really good soldier because you not only fought in World War II, but you went on to fight in Korea and Vietnam, and you finally retired in the 1970s.
Yes, I retired as a sergeant major, and I'd do it all over again if they let me.
I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to the Route 51 Year in Review show on Wisconsin Public Radio. Another series of conflicts weighs heavily on those who served our country and some who are still serving, the veterans and servicemen who fought in the Persian Gulf. They were honored this past summer in a week-long tribute at High Ground Veterans Memorial Park in Neillsville, which was the subject of this story called All Present and Accounted For at the High Ground. It is the opening day of Operation Persian Gulf Welcome Home.
We remember the Wisconsin men and women killed in Iraq. Ryan P. Long.
Present.
On High Ground, flanked by dozens of American flags, the veterans salute and shout present as the names are read of those who lost their lives in the region's many conflicts.
Charles A. Kaufman.
Present.
Charles Kaufman died at the age of 20 on June 26, 2005.
It was a convoy of Humvees, and there was a roadside bomb in the cement.
His mother, Celeste Kaufman, says she wonders what Charles would be doing now.
He had a great smile. I've been told he was killed instantly, which I find comfort in that, because I never wanted him to suffer.
She is now a volunteer at the High Ground.
The veterans of past, present, and future are never forgotten here. Their families and friends are never forgotten here.
Ryan D. Jopek.
Present.
It is almost 10 years to the day since Iraq veteran Brian Jopek last spoke to his son Ryan, who had followed him overseas.
Present.
He turned 20 on June 1st of 2006. His unit was only going to be in country another couple weeks. They came home, I think it was 2 days after he was buried, and I was there at Volk Field to greet them. I just felt I had to be there.
He says at the High Ground, his son's sacrifice and his service are respected.
I have been called a baby killer while I was in downtown Madison on State Street in uniform.
Joe Peck remembers a scene from the movie The Hurt Locker, which shows the internal struggle combat veterans can face when they return home.
1 minute, you're in a wreck. You're getting shot at. And the next minute, you're in the cereal aisle, looking at a box of cereal for your kids. I can't help but think that there have been so many that have had to deal with that.
Andrew Halverson.
Present.
J.R. Nichols stands in front of the memorial he built, a 120-foot wall of remembrance containing the names of all those killed in the War on Terror.
From the bombing of the barracks in Beirut, Lebanon in 1983 to current day.
How else do you say thank you?
Nichols, a civilian, worries about those described as missing in America, veterans suffering from depression and post-traumatic stress.
22 suicides a day. We're not taking care of their
hidden wounds. We're not helping them.
Richard J. Nelson.
Present.
There is a giant boot print at the high ground, a walkthrough monument that contains three statues. One of them is a serviceman staring into space. Sculptor Michael Martino calls it the Thinker.
It could be PTSD, it could be just bad memories, it could be lost friends, it could be family issues, it could be not having a job. All of those things that a vet has to deal with. The thousand-mile stare.
Tracy Lynn Alger.
Present.
The high ground's volunteer general, Kirk Rodman, served when Eisenhower was president. At 82, he is helping troubled veterans and trying to reach the next generation of soldiers.
I talked to a lot of kids, and my goal is to touch that one kid so when he has to push the button, he won't do it. So my kids will be safe.
All president accounted for, sir.
On this day, all of the Persian Gulf veterans are present and accounted for at the high ground, even those who are only here in spirit. Glenn Moberg, Wisconsin Public Radio News.
Support for WPR comes from the Wisconsin Alumni Association, committed to preparing today's students to succeed in tomorrow's workforce through the University of Wisconsin's annual campaign. More at supportuw.org. Support also comes from Christine Bremer-Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer & Trollope, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer & Trollope, because the right results matter most. Bremer-Law.com.
And you are listening to the Route 51 Year in Review show on Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's jazz violinist Randy Sabine in a live in-studio jam just 2 weeks ago on Route 51.
Much my clothes don't fit. I can't stand and I can't sit. Started in and I couldn't quit. I ate too much for dinner. I ate so much my pants are ripped. My snaps won't snap, my zips won't zip. I need a health club membership. I'm bulking up for winter. Pass the gravy, pass the rolls, pass the green bean casseroles and the mashed potato bowl. Have mercy on a sinner. Turkey dressing, pumpkin pie, eat until you want to die. I'm just a North Wisconsin guy, bulking up for winter. That I'm in pain. Blood is rushing from my brain. I think I'll sit and watch the game, and I don't care who's the winner. I ate so much my socks are tight. My shoes won't tie. My shorts ain't right. I couldn't eat another bite. I'm bulking up for winter. Pass the gravy, pass the rolls, pass the green bean casserole and the mashed potato bowl. Have mercy on a sinner. Turkey dressing, pumpkin pie, eat until you want to die. I'm just a North Wisconsin guy, bulking up for winter.
Randy Sabine in a live in-studio jam. There's a special place in our hearts for music and the arts on Route 51. And one of those places is the Lee Auchie Woodson Art Museum of Wausau. In the spring, they featured the artwork of illusionist Walter Wick, who appeared on Route 51 with his old friend, NPR puzzle master and New York Times crossword editor Will Shortz. Here they are talking about the difference between word puzzles and visual puzzles.
With a human-made puzzle, whether it's one of Walter's puzzles or a crossword or Sudoku,
When you get the final solution, you feel a sense of accomplishment. You've brought the world into order, and it's a great feeling. What a big difference, I think, is with crosswords, the more crosswords you do, the better you get. Mm-hmm. And with Walter's puzzles, I think they have a wider audience because you don't have to have a great vocabulary, you don't have to have a super vocabulary or know all sorts of abstruse things. Everyone, a kid, can approach one of Walter's puzzles on an equal basis with anybody else. Everyone's equal.
Yeah, I think that the children are on the same level as adults, and it often delights adults that a four-year-old who can't yet read is being read to about some of the nouns in the rhymes, and their hand just immediately goes to the object in this kind of chaotic-looking photo.
That's illusionist Walter Wick and NPR puzzle master Will Shortz. Each year at the Woodson Art Museum, their flagship exhibit, Birds in Art, features outstanding work with an environmental theme. This year's master wildlife artist, Karen Bondarchuk, appeared on a show hosted by Route 51 executive producer Rick Ryer, where she talked about her love of crows and a year-long art project for her mother, who was suffering from Alzheimer's.
The Woodson Art Museum, Karen, will be featuring a personal piece of yours called Ergo Sum, A Crow a Day. And it's a project that was inspired by your mother's experience with Alzheimer's disease. Why did you choose crows for this piece?
The crow for me really represents that idea of something that we take for granted, something that's always there, it's ubiquitous, they're pretty much everywhere. And I liked that idea of it just being the everyday thing. Like we often take for granted, you know, the people around us who we care about. They're in our lives every day until they're not. And so for me, it represented that. The series kind of took on a life of its own at a certain point and expanded a little bit with some ravens being in there. My mother lives in British Columbia. Ravens are a common sight there. So I decided, okay, I can add ravens in too. But that was sort of the genesis of the crow being there.
Did your mother have a reaction to that?
My mom is really no longer able to comprehend. Mm-hmm. And so she's in the later stages of Alzheimer's at this point. I did visit her a couple of times during the year that I created that series and sat with her and did some drawings, which for me was a nice way to connect to what it was I was doing. It kind of reinforced that idea of, you know, I'm here with you now and I'm, you know, able to connect with you in this way.
Karen Bondarchuk, master wildlife artist for the Lee Auchie Woodson Art Museum's Birds in Art exhibit with Route 51's Rick Ryer. There has been an annual tradition that's been bringing families together each summer for 148 years in north central Wisconsin. This past year, the Marathon County Fair was also a sanctuary, a safe place, if you will, for those tired of the divisiveness of partisan politics.
Take a step back in time at the 148th annual Wisconsin Valley Fair.
148 years ago, Wausau was a frontier outpost of lumberjacks and lumber barons. The first Wisconsin Valley Fair showed off Marathon County farm animals and the people who raised them. Some things haven't changed.
You just want to say, okay, I'm trying to do my paperwork. Everybody be quiet. But you know they're going to keep making noise.
Poultry supervisor Linda Pluckelman is trying to fill out forms in a very noisy exhibition building. Her 4-H kids have been working all year for this day.
Beautiful, beautiful birds here. I'm very impressed with what the kids are bringing in. Some of the white birds, they just about glow. The kids have them cleaned and polished. It's beautiful.
16-year-old Morgan Joswack has just won a blue ribbon. She had to overcome a case of the jitters during the showmanship competition.
I've been raising chickens since I was about 7 or 8. It's fun to see all the chickens get all hyper over absolutely nothing.
What do you get out of it spiritually?
Making the animals feel happy and making sure they don't get hurt by anything.
Get yourself a pork chop on a stick.
People have always come to the fair for the food.
Our complete dinners are meatloaf, turkey this year we added, and roast beef.
The First English Lutheran Church has been serving full meals here since 1919. Neil Yedis has been a part of it for 30 years.
People still love to come and eat, you know, and, and especially Lutherans.
Also, make sure to grab an elephant by the ear at the Optimist Elephant Ear Stand.
Middle schoolers Eric Bailey, Caden Barden, and Deshaun Cosby are pushing pachyderm pastry.
They're amazing.
They're delicious.
You come get them.
They're really good.
Now, do you really make these out of elephants?
No.
They're healthy, aren't they?
Yes. No. Very healthy.
Sweet Adeline cream puffs are as delicious as they were 38 years ago.
Cream puffs, cream puffs. Come and get your cream puffs.
Laurel Haith, a member of the female barbershop group The Sweet Adelines, sings the virtues of her sweet fare.
They're made with real cream, whipped by our special whippers who have been highly trained.
On the east side of the Midway.
And after stuffing yourself with fair food, what could be better than spinning around in circles?
I couldn't lift my head up, and it made me dizzy.
Calissa Strobin and Jocelyn Krentz have just gotten off of a ride called Zero Gravity.
It was spinning really fast, and I like rides that spin.
Jack and Trey Babinski and Nicholas Sloan, also in their early teens, have proven their mettle on the Orbiter.
It was very exciting and I liked it a lot.
Just like the speed and the height and the constant spinning.
It makes you really dizzy and throw up.
It takes 80 people to run the carnival rides and 46 trucks to move them from fair to fair, according to North American Midway General Manager Pat Rep.
We can get it the whole show up in about 8 hours, and it takes about 5 hours to get it all back down.
Rep says the county fair brings people together in a partisan world.
You know, there's not a lot today in this world, if you watch the news or on Facebook, that's happy stuff anymore. And, you know, our job is to take people away from the news channels and the election and enjoy themselves. And that's our number one goal.
Back in the poultry barn, Linda Pluckelman agrees there's more to life than politics.
Thank the Lord, right? Yes, more than politics.
For at least 1 week out of the year.
Thanks again for joining us.
Glenn Mowbray, Wisconsin Public Radio News. The 148th edition of the Marathon County Fair. Now, as always on our Route 51 Year in Review show, we leave you with a live in-studio performance by the South Beach Chamber Ensemble, led by Wausau native Michael Andrews, who brings his chamber musicians here each summer for his Up North tour. Michael always has some surprises up his sleeve. This year, he graced us with a tango.
We're going to travel down to Argentina and play La Cumbarcita.
South Beach Chamber Ensemble with Wausau native and ensemble leader Michael Andrews on cello, Sarah Schreffler and Timothy McCollum on violin, Barbara Beachy on viola, and Cindy Blandino on double bass. I'm Glenn Mobrig. Thanks to the people who made it happen, our executive producer Rick Ryer, our on-air producers Janice Schleiss and Jane Ritger. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme, and thanks to Wad Gesme and Eli Frieders for their help with this show. Remember to follow us on Facebook. If you missed part of the show, you can hear it again in its entirety tomorrow, Friday night, at 7 on WHRM 90.9 FM Wausau. Happy New Year, everyone. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. And until next year, we're heading out of town. We'll be right back.